Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
With this new commitment, Darden is doing what no restaurant company...
Hard to pick one. No, if I pick one favorite fruit, it's French fries. Okay? It's French fries. I can't stop eating them. But eat your vegetables. And exercise.
With this new commitment, Darden is doing what no restaurant company has done before. They're not just making their kids' menus healthier so that parents have more choices and more control. They're making changes across their full menu at every single one of their restaurants throughout the country. They're looking at all the food they serve, and they're asking themselves one simple question.
My favorite food in the whole wide world are French fries.
The whole wide world. The whole wide world of Michelle Defarge. Eat your vegetables, boys and girls, but I'll eat my French fries. And now she's telling restaurants to change their menus. Now look, I've written books on health and nutrition since the 1970s, the early 70s, so... don't assume that I don't know what a healthy diet is. However, the reason people eat French fries and hamburgers is because they taste good and they like them and they're inexpensive and they fill people's stomachs, especially the poor. And now you have a woman in the White House who is astonishing in her hypocrisy. But what's the point of talking about it? How about all this just for a flag? Did you hear that flap? Allegedly, it's all over the media and the internet. There's a video of First Lady Michelle Defarge Obama apparently showing disrespect to the American flag at a ceremony in honor of the victims of the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. As police and firefighters ceremoniously fold the flag to the sound of marching bagpipers, a cynical-looking Mrs. Obama leans to her husband, the president, and appears to say, all this just for a flag? She then purses her lips and shakes her head slightly as Mr. Obama gives her a knowing nod. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have any idea who we have in the White House? Do you have any idea that the contempt that both she and Obama have for America is now seeping out of their pores? The fact of the matter is America is being bankrupted, the military is being bankrupted, the society is being undermined by these two hardcore lifetime Marxists. The question is, will America be destroyed by someone as unqualified and insignificant as Obama? We know he's a Trojan horse, but the question is, can we survive the Trojan horse? I don't know. But let me give you some quotes. Someone once said, not even God can sink the ship. That was about the Titanic. Someone said about AIG, it's too big to fail. That was about AIG. Pollyanna-esque fools are saying America can never be destroyed. Any other questions? 1-800-449-8255. All this just for a flag. All this just for a flag, says Michelle. Eat your vegetables while I eat my French fries, says Michelle. Also, a report that a general in the U.S. Air Force was pressured by Obama to change his testimony to Congress to support a Democratic donor's product in the military-industrial complex. We have a banana republic, with the most corrupt administration in American history. Jack saw it, not a face, not the sign he expected, but there it was. A red stain spreading across the shoulder of one of those white jackets. And he sure as hell didn't think the waiter had cut himself in the kitchen, not in the chest he hadn't. Jack shot forward, shoving people aside, moving forward, moving toward that red stained jacket as it weaved in and out of the crowd, getting closer to the podium. Jack suddenly felt hands grabbing him, roughly pulling him aside. Just 10 yards from the podium, the man with the red stained jacket realized this was as far as he'd get. He stopped and shouted, "Allah Akbar," as he ripped open his jacket, spinning around to show the crowd a vest full of C4 with an LED timer attached, the timer ticking down from 10 seconds. That's the back cover of Abuse of Power. 1-800-449-8255, Albany, New York. Joe, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage?
Yes.
Yeah. Two perfect actors for if you ever got a movie. One for Jack would be Liev Schreiber. He doesn't show his guile, but he's capable of it. And you know he's capable of it by looking at it. See, Daniel Craig, you can see that he's guile. You know, he has guile. And the other one would be Jason Statham, because he's a true monster.
Yeah.
I don't know how
Jason,
old...
Yeah, he's my, Jason Statham is a great actor, but he does too many comic book movies. You know what I'm saying? All of his movies are these overly muscular explosion movies. But if they actually toned them down and put him into an action role that was believable, he'd be perfect for the part physically. I agree with you.
How old is your Special Forces guy supposed to be?
Who, the guy, Tony Antonori, his friend?
Yeah.
Tony's older. Tony fought in Vietnam. Tony is 69.
Chris Christopherson.
No, he's too flabby. Tony is tall and thin with black hair. Did you read the book at all, or you don't have it?
I don't have it, Michael.
All right, well, I'm sending you a free copy. Liev Schreiber's not one of my favorite actors. He's too kvetchy. If I were to do a biopic, a docudrama about Congressman Anthony Weiner, I would book Liev Schreiber. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I mean, if I were to do the life story of Anthony Weiner, it would be played by Liev Schreiber. That would be the perfect picture. See, I would book Mrs. Anthony Weiner, his beautiful wife, to play the part of my heroine, Sarah Gadon. But, you know, she's pregnant and she's not an actress. She's a very serious assistant to the Secretary of State who has very important business bringing down the Middle East in order to turn the Middle East over to Al-Qaeda. I mean, that's a full-time job. You know, that's a very, very big job. In order to destroy what shreds there were of America friendliness in the Middle East, to rip it down in a lifetime and to install Al-Qaeda, that's not an easy job. Play I Like French Fries. I want to hear it.
My favorite food in the whole wide world are French fries.
Stop. Why does she say whole wide world? What is that? Did you ever notice politicians, what comedians they are? They have a different vernacular for different audiences. Hillary used to go before Jewish audiences and speak with a rising inflection if she was south of Boca Raton. And she'd go to the north and she'd sound like she was from Maine. That, you remember once Hillary went into that incredible voice, that crazy channeling voice? Beowulf, do we have that one? I don't think I've come so long down this road to go backwards, that one. I mean, politicians do have strange voices. Let's take some calls on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Detroit, Michigan. See, I say Detroit instead of Detroit. You don't think I don't know. Mike in Detroit, Michigan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You're the man, Michael. You're the man. Hey, my wife and two sons, we're walking in to eat dinner, and we're all going to order supersize our fries. We're going to eat burgers and fries. To show our disdain for Michelle Obama's comments today, we're going to order a super batches of French fries, and you know, just to show that we can.
Yeah, I think I'm going to order fries for the first time in a few months. I hope that the sale of fries goes through the roof, just to tell her, you know what? We don't care what you have to say because A, you're a hypocrite, and B, it's not your business. Why don't you pay attention to the corruption in the Solyndra contract and the other contracts? Why don't you pay attention to the corruption inside the White House? Why don't you pay attention to what's really going on instead of telling people what to eat? As clearly, no one listens to you anyway. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. Barry Manilow is still living? Barry Manilow on Ron Paul, I agree with just about everything he says. I thought Barry Manilow was actually a, I don't mean any disrespect, I always thought Barry Manilow was a robot that didn't actually exist. I thought he'd been created by a group of scientists in Delray Beach, Florida, in the back of a diner, in order to appeal to the women in the aging homes. Book hidden back of store, couldn't find book at stores. New listener, Savage, wonderful. Hatfield, Tom Selleck. Oh, come on, Tom Selleck. Tom Selleck's like 80, 90. Joe in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. How old is Tom Selleck?
I don't know, but all I know is he's stood up to Hollywood all his life. Well, and you get him to shave his mustache, he'd be great. He'd be great.
Well, you haven't read my book because my hero's in his 40s, not in his 80s. Or 70s. Nothing wrong with it if you make it to your 80s, but my hero, Jack Hatfield, is in his 40s, not 80s, 70s, 60s, not even 50s. But I'm sending out books today, as I promised all week. Everyone who gets on this show gets through the call screen of Doug. Doug Lynn is in the dugout, catching the balls thrown at him by the callers. Anyone who gets through the dugout gets on the air, speaks to more people in 1 minute than they'll meet for the rest of their lives. You know, that's an astonishing idea. Did you know that? You know, if you get on my show and you get 1 minute of airtime, you will actually reach more people than you've ever spoken with for your entire life. And I have to do this every day, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for 18 years. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Hitler of Iran's coming to New York, and the communist American-hating vermin at Columbia having dinner with Hitler. Netanyahu is coming to the United Nations. I'd like to see Netanyahu get into a fistfight with Ahmadinejad and knock him out. That would be the end of the Palestinian problem and the end of the Iran problem. But that's not going to happen. Instead, they wait until a bomb goes off. That's the problem with diplomacy. Diplomacy doesn't really work. Up to a point, yes, it's fine. When you're dealing with civilized human beings, diplomacy can work. But when you're dealing with idiots like Ahmadinejad, who is a diehard fanatic, radical Muslim, who believes there must be an apocalypse to bring about the next equivalent of the Messiah, you can't deal with them. What's wrong with the people running the West today? Are super achievers happy? I was going to ask you on the show today. I'm a super, super achiever. You know, I was reading my book jacket. I look at this guy, a picture of me with the microphone. Good-looking guy, nice suit, nice tie, nice beard, nice smile, nice microphone. And I don't even know it's me. It says, Dr. Michael Savage is a multimedia icon in the conservative movement. The Telegraph in the UK ranked him as one of the most influential conservatives in the United States. And with approximately 10 million weekly listeners, the UC Berkeley PhD is the third most listened to conservative talk show host. Recently featured in The New Yorker and Playboy, Dr. Savage is the author of 25 books, including 4 New York Times bestsellers. He won the coveted Freedom of Speech Award from Talkers Magazine 07. Dr. Savage holds a master's degree in medical botany and a second in medical anthropology. Additionally, earned his PhD from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and nutrition sciences. He is an ardent conservationist, is dedicated to his family, and is a proud patriot of his country. Then why am I so miserable? In other words, if you read these book jackets, you would think people like myself are happy all the time. I'm personally not. I'm miserable most of the time. I'm miserable because my mind is so finely tuned to what's going on. I walk around as though I'm in agony because I can hear it and see it and smell it. I don't know how people can be so gullible as to not see what Michelle and Barry are doing to this country. How do they get away with it? The most corrupt administration in American history. We're like worse than a banana republic. We're like Paraguay under this. That's on the back of abusive power. Is anyone out there in a super achiever and miserable? How can you be happy in this world? I don't understand it. You got to learn to live with misery. That's the only answer I have for you. See, your big problem is you've been told that you should be happy, but you're not supposed to be happy. That's the problem. That's the big lie. Once you understand that man is not put on earth to be happy, you can actually get through life in a fairly dignified manner without committing homicide or suicide. But if you walk around all day long saying, why am I unhappy? Why am I unhappy? Why am I unhappy? The next thing you do is expose yourself to all the quacks out there. The shrinks, the pill peddlers, you know, the shamans who tell you they have the secret. You know, become a woman. If you're a man, you'll be happy. If you're a man, become a woman, you'll be happy. If you're a woman, put an appendage on and become a man, you'll be happy. It's all nonsense. It's called the vicissitudes of existence. They've always been horrendous. We're all put out here to suffer. First of all, if you understand Christianity, that's what Christianity is about, suffering. Then if you understand Buddhism, it's all about being on the wheel, suffering. Where did you wake up? Where did you read somewhere that you're supposed to be happy all day long? And this goes right back to Michelle and Barack Obama. What they're peddling is a big lie. They're telling you that if you don't eat French fries, you'll be happy. They're telling you if you tax your neighbor who makes more money than you, you'll be happy. They're telling you that if you fund another corrupt solar company, you'll be happy. They're telling you, and fill in the blank, okay, you got a whole book there. Fill in the blanks. That's because fundamentally they're Fabian socialists, but in the extreme example, Fabian socialists, that's who they really are, because they cannot yet be the revolutionary Leninists that they'd like to be. So they're going to take the modest approach until they can get away with getting away with the Leninist approach. Fabian socialists figured out that the way to change a society is gradually, not through revolution, okay? And look how far they've gotten. Look how far this couple has gamed the system. You know Obama got into Harvard on affirmative action. He won't release his records from high school nor from college. He became president because of affirmative action, because white liberals like you felt guilty and you made him president, you fools, you. You may as well be given a trenching tool and a bag of lime and throw yourself in the grave for what is being done to this country. So what am I going to do? I keep doing my radio show. I write books. What's the point of telling you all of this? What's the point of telling you all of this? Expose a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah, plot within the highest cars of power that will dwarf 9/11. You don't believe me. It's just fiction. It's meant to be read. Abuse of power. It's a novel. It's fiction. It's not real.
Savage.
Well, how you doing today in the prison of America? Welcome back to the jailkeeper here. Actually, I'm the entertainer in the prison. Prison guards let me entertain you every day for a few hours a day. What do you call a guy who's the head of the jail? What do you call that? The warden. The warden, Obama, and Mrs. Warden are telling you they're cutting French fries out of your trays because it's not good for you prisoners, while they're feasting on French fries back in the warden's dining hall. It's right out of Animal Farm. It's amazing to me. You know, so I'm joking. Look, when I was a kid, what did I want to be? Like most kids, I didn't really know. I wasn't one of these young kids who knew. I really didn't. And I felt kind of stupid because a lot of the kids I grew up with were very motivated from young. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. But I didn't know. I had no idea what I wanted to be. And all I know is I liked animals. That's all. So you can make a career out of that. In those days, they looked at you like you were a little, you know, touched. They felt bad for you if you said, what do you want to be? And if a kid said, I like animals, they figured he was touched. The most he could do is, who knows? They didn't know what to make of him. So I went to college. I didn't really know. I wasn't focused like everyone else. What do you do in college? You look for sex, drugs, and rock and roll like everybody else. Except there were kids who were motivated. They went to medical school, dental school. Most of them are either dead now or out of work. I found out later on that I liked the glint in the animal's eye more than I liked the animal. In other words, I didn't like the anatomy part of the animal. I liked the spirit of the animal. And that's what set me on my life path in many ways. But when I was a young guy growing up, if I were to read the New Yorker, which I did, and I saw a profile of an author or a musician, I thought that that was the equivalent of God's head. I said, holy God, this guy must be incredible. A profile in the New Yorker? Or if I picked up Playboy in between looking at you-know-what and I'd see an interview, that was their formula, Playboy. In order to peddle their filth, the airbrushed women, they would have to then intersperse it with interviews with leading intellectuals of the day. So you'd be like, wow, you got written up in Playboy by a guy who hated you, but you still came out looking good. You have a profile in the New Yorker. You've published 25 books. You have 4 New York Times bestsellers. You have a daily radio show. You have a novel now, and it's going to be on the bestseller list next week. Then why the hell are you miserable? You got all these degrees. Why are you unhappy? Well, that's the question of questions, isn't it? I can blame it on the political system. I could say it's because I know the country's been hijacked by a gang from Chicago who found the ultimate tool to engineer themselves into the jackpot. That would be one reason I'm in agony, because I don't think there's going to be much left behind if they're allowed to get away with this kind of criminality. That's one thing that agitates me on a daily basis. But I'd be lying if I said to you that it was only the political system that agonizes my soul. I believe that the soul is agonized at birth. And I believe that in some cases people are just people who live in agony. And you can live, by the way, a long life in agony. See, this is another misnomer. That if you carry around any unhappiness, you're going to die young. That's rubbish. That's part of the drug salesman. That's part of the medico-pharmaceutical establishment to tell you that in order to live long, you got to feel good. It's not true. Sure, you can feel good. God bless you. Whatever you have to do, massage, sex, running, you know, whatever it may be. Believe me, I can break the wheel. I mean, if I get on a bicycle, I can break the wheel. I know how to break the wheel, okay? But the fact is, day to day, if you let it get to you, you can really get crazy. It really can get to you. Here's an article from Prison Planet that'll make your hair stand up. In England, 30,000 British kids, some as young as 3 years old, have had their names entered in a government database, and they've been branded as racist or homophobic for using playground insults. Did you hear what I just said? The psychopaths in Britain who banned Michael Savage are going to schools now. They're condemning little kids 3 years old for saying words like, well, what are the words? Lesbian, gay, or broccoli head? Other cases included told a teacher this work is gay have been added to the thought crime database in England. Do you have any idea what I'm saying to you? Kids are being put into a database for being little children? Who did this to you? I wish I could really tell you what I think. Who did it to you and what needs to be done to them. But I can't. You see, boys and girls, it's a radio show. I have to entertain you. Liberalism is a mental disorder. The first thing you have to understand is that liberals are mentally sick, and most of them are on medication. I stand about by my words. Almost every liberal I've ever met, the most fanatic, are on Prozac. Every last one of them is sick in the head. And the sicker they are, the more they tell you what to do with your life. Now in England, three-year-olds are being branded racist or homophobic and being put in a government database. And by the way, this could kill their future careers, because these little children are now being told that they've committed hate crimes. And hate crime laws pushed by the gay mafia have now been hijacked by the state of England to get children institutionalized on criminal databases at age 3. This is way beyond Orwell's 1984. This is beyond anything you could ever imagine would happen with the people who pushed tolerance down your throat. They were never tolerant. They were fascist Nazis to their heart. I've been trying to tell you this for 17 years on the radio. Many of you believe me, and many of you love me, and many of you listen to me, and many of you buy my books. I get it. But many of you are naive fools. Look at what they're doing to children now in England. Did you know that I'm the only member of the American broadcasting world who was not permitted to enter England? Do you know that they smeared my name because of a group, I believe, funded by George Soros, took my statements out of context, sent them to the evil liberals in England, who then said, I belong on a list with murderers and terrorists. Yeah, okay, you like that, huh? You think that's good? You could be next. You could be branded something next, and you could be banned from something next. You could be thrown out of this country if this keeps up. Which is why I wrote Abuse of Power. People say, well, why would you write a novel? Because I felt I had said it all nonfiction-wise. I say I do it every day on the radio. And I felt by creating a character, Jack Hatfield, and writing a first-rate thriller, you'll see what happens to a man who's unfairly smeared and who tries to clear his name. And what happens is he finds out that there's a 9/11 being planned in San Francisco, and he races to stop it. You understand this? Steve in Kansas City, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just wanted to call and tell you how you helped me bridge the generational gap with your latest book. abuse of power. I went to the local Barnes & Noble. It was the previous place I had bought Trickle-Up Poverty, read that book. And as I was buying Trickle-Up Poverty, I spoke to the blue hair. I don't mean that with any disrespect. That's a respectful term. But I was buying it and speaking to the lady behind the counter and telling her a little bit about what I thought it was about. So I go back to buy the abuse of power, and sure enough, it's the same lady. And I tell her I'm buying this book, and she says, you know, I remember you. You bought Trickle-Up Poverty. I bought that book, she says. I read that. She says, I had never heard of those things. And she says, I'm going to buy Abuse of Power now.
Well, you mean a clerk, an elderly clerk in a bookstore remembered you that well?
Yeah, see, it hadn't been that far apart. It's not that big a town.
Well, look, Steve, I appreciate, you know, callers and listeners like you for even mentioning my name in a bookstore, because bookstores are wonderful places. On the other hand, you know that by and large, 99% of the people who work in bookstores are like Madame Defarge. And that's the problem. And you converted one Madame Defarge. I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. Yes, I did read that story to you. Three-year-olds in England are now being branded as racist and homophobic and being put in a government database. Over 30,000 British children, some as young as 3 years old, have had their names registered on a government database, and they've been branded racist or homophobic because they used playground insults. And these infractions could impact their future careers. This came out after civil liberties groups, such as the Manifesto Club, made a Freedom of Information Act request, which discovered that 34,000 incidents of, quote, racism in total were reported for the year 09-10, with nursery school toddlers as young as 3 being put in a state database because they used the words gay or lesbian. One child called another child broccoli head. Other cases, while another who told the teacher this work is gay, were added to the thought crime database. This is because liberalism is an evil mental disorder. This is in Prison Planet. Three-year-olds branded racist and homophobic, put in government database. I'm speechless. And what does it have to do with you? You say, well, it's England, we're not like them. You're crazy. If you've got a lying, hypocritical first lady who stuffs her face with French fries and greasy ribs, and I'm not going to mince words anymore, and then lectures you and tells you to eat broccoli, and then goes and tells food chains to modify their menus, you think we're far behind them? You're crazy. These are the same people. Obama and Mrs. Obama have the same mindset as these in England. You just don't know it yet. They just can't get away with it yet. They can't get away with it yet. It doesn't mean they wouldn't do it if they could. You get it? Houston, Texas. Jen, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I want to tell you that no words that you say are taken in vain. And every word that you do say on the radio is so welcome to us down in Texas, the one state that Obama absolutely hates. And we're not going to stop eating our French fries, and we are pork-eating infidels and proud gun-toting patriots.
Hello, infidels. That used to be one of my introductions on this show. I should use it again. I used to open my show with that. Hello, infidels.
Amen, and I want to say God bless you, and I just cannot wait to read your book.
Well, I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power anyway, whether you bought it or are going to buy it. I'm sending you one. We are living through the most corrupt administration in American history. You're in the midst of it. The most corrupt administration in American history. The solar company, Solyndra, received $500 and some odd million from Obama through the so-called stimulus funds, which we told you was nothing but a piggy bank for donors to Obama. The FBI raided the firm last week because they went bankrupt after getting the money. But they're not the only firm to get stimulus money and go bankrupt. Four other companies received a piece of the $800 billion stimulus from Nancy Pelosi, like Solyndra, only to later file for bankruptcy. How come they're not in handcuffs? Why aren't the politicians who forced the stimulus down our throat taken out in handcuffs and indicted? Tell me why! Why are they going after the CEOs of the company? Why not go after the corrupt, rotten politicians who told us that these funds would be used honestly to promote jobs? Put them in handcuffs! Won't happen. It will not happen. It won't happen. So you say, why am I unhappy? I'm miserable. I feel like I'm going to explode with rage at what they're getting away with. I've never seen anything like it. I told you all along, you know, I'm a big fan of various television shows and movies. I love The Sopranos. It's one of my favorite shows. I'm a big fan. I watch reruns all the time. There's a very famous sequence in The Sopranos, which I warned you about as Obama was, after he was elected. It's about a guy, a friend of his, who owns a sporting goods store, a big sporting goods store. And the guy's a degenerate gambler. And Tony Soprano, the gangster, says, look, don't come into this private game because you're going to get hurt. And the guy can't help it because he's a sick gambler. He's a degenerate gambler. He gets in the game and he loses everything. So then Tony and his gang get their hooks into the store, the sporting goods store. And the gangsters are all sitting in the back room. And what they're doing is they're busting out the credit cards. They're busting out the credit of the sporting goods store. And as the sequence goes on, this once thriving sporting goods store starts to empty out of goods because they're selling the goods off and pocketing the money, or they're taking the credit cards and busting it out by buying airline tickets and selling the airline tickets. And I said, this is exactly what the Obama administration is doing to this country. Do you understand why I said to you why I like The Sopranos? Because there was art that was predicting life. And you're living through it. America is the sporting goods store. And it's emptying out because the gang is busting it out. That's how I see it. Am I wrong? If I'm wrong, tell me where I'm wrong. I'll be back. All right, I'm going a little far afield from where I wanted to be today. I mean, I don't want to make it too personal. You know, I have a new book out. I should take pleasure in it. And I do. I really do. I mean, it's thrilling in a certain way to have made a jump into a new area for myself and to see a success. The publisher's jumping up for joy. My agent's jumping up for joy. But truthfully, I emotionally have to tell you, you know, Eugene O'Neill, the great playwright, said it best when he said that success is a stale finale. The struggle is the success. I don't know if you ever even know who Eugene O'Neill is anymore, but he was one of the great playwrights way before my time. But I grew up reading the greats. And remember Long Day's Journey Into Night? I mean, this guy saw things in a very somber way. And Eugene O'Neill wrote that. Success is a stale finale. The struggle is the success. Now, the question is, you know, what do you mean by the struggle? You want to work in a coal mine? I mean, you could take it to the extremes of religious self-immolation. You know, you could beat yourself up with a thorn bush or such. You know, you can make yourself miserable. He didn't mean that. He didn't mean make yourself sick. He meant that struggling to achieve something, being busy and involved and struggling for it, is the success itself. But when you achieve the end, there's nothing there. At the end of the day, the success is a stale finale. Don't expect to be happy. And this is why a lot of entertainers wind up on drugs. I'm hardened against that because I'm older and I've had my trials and tribulations, and which hardened me every step of the way, which I don't want to go into and start complaining to you because I'll sound like the guy with blackboards. But the point is that the reason so many entertainers who are so damn talented wind up on drugs or alcohol day and night is because they finish a performance and there's nothing there. It's a black hole. They don't know how to fill it, so they fill it with the drugs or the alcohol or whatever it may be. Drugs, sex, and alcohol sounds good to you, but at the end of the day, is it? If it's so good, why are they in rehab day in and day out? If it's so great, is the question. So then you go to the other extreme and you say, all right, so what do you take? The shaker approach, the white knuckle approach? And just be like a shaker there, like an Amos shaker with a buggy whip, you know, and bite the bullet day and night and be that way. Like, I don't need sex. I don't need drink. I don't need drugs. I don't need food. I need nothing. I mean, there are people who take the ascetic approach, and they're actually, in a way, they're also dealing with their unhappiness in that way. They're biting the bullet, so to speak. I don't know. I mean, I'm just talking. I'm rambling on and on here because, look, what is a talk show? What, every day I got to tell you news? I gave you news already. It's the most corrupt administration in history. They're the most hypocritical two in the history of this country. And those who sold us the stimulus bill should be indicted for fraud. The senators, The speakers, they should be taken out in handcuffs and indicted and tried. They sold us a stimulus bill for almost $900 billion. And wait, where'd the money go? Now we're finding out $500 million went to a solar company in California. How much of that money went into the pocket of politicians? Okay, that's what I want to know. How much got kicked back? How much of the VIG went up to the top? You don't read that, though. The FBI goes in and the FBI gets the files. That sounds good on paper, right? But it's Eric Holder's FBI. So people are asking themselves, wait a minute. Why would Eric Holder's FBI raid this solar firm that got $500 million in stimulus funds and then declare bankruptcy if Eric Holder basically is in the same machine? So another guy writes, because the reason he jumped on this is because he wants to get the evidence and bury it. He wants to start an investigation that goes nowhere, along the lines of what I told you yesterday on the show. Remember, Pentagon official, cybersecurity official, the man who was the inspiration behind the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, went to West Point. He is killed and his body's found in a dumpster in Delaware. And there's not been one story about that murder since last May. And his widow said at that time, someone killed my husband. It's a cover-up. No one ever heard from her again. Same exact story. Why? Tell me why that's not a bigger story than any. Who killed him? Who did this to him? Don't tell me that there's no leads. A guy of that level, his body is found in a dumpster in Delaware, and his ring from West Point is still in his hand, and his expensive watch is Rolex. Why? There wasn't a robbery. So he was assassinated. By whom? And what was he about to blow the whistle on? Well, I know from reading the news stories that Wheeler had just visited someone, I believe, in the Justice Department, if I'm not mistaken. Shortly thereafter, he was seen deranged in the streets. Somebody drugged him. Any detective would tell you that's two and two. And I put that into abuse of power. And then I speculate all about this because it's a character within it. Something's wrong. Something's wrong with the picture.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In the whole wide world are French fries.
It is the Savage Nation. Can you imagine if I could be 17 again and look forward and say, one day you'll have a daily radio show. One day you'll have written 25 books. One day you'll have a fiction bestseller on the New York Times list. And at the end of the road, what does it mean? So I was quoting Eugene O'Neill, who I said, success is a stale finale. The struggle is the success. And my producer, Beowulf, found the actual quote. I have to read this for you because this is so important for me to get across to you. You have to understand that there's a difference between a figure who is tragic and a figure who is depressed. I am not actually a depressing figure because I'm not depressed. I may be a tragic figure, but I'm not a depressing figure. And that's what I'm trying to get across to you. So it's very important I read this to you and why you'll see in a minute. The answer is, let's say you're 18 years old, 17 years old, 15 years old, and your mother asked you to listen to the show, or your dad. And he said, oh, listen to this guy. He knows what he's talking about. And a lot of this doesn't make sense to you. You don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe you like my voice. Maybe you like the fact that I goof around with my dog, Teddy. Maybe you like the talk about food and cars. But you don't really get the politics part of it. That's okay. One day you will or you won't. But you're going to go through a period in your life that everyone goes through, and some come out of it better than others. Some don't come out of it at all, okay, in plain English? And that's called adolescence. Some people just don't get through it, or they come out of it a broken creature. Well, some come out of it just fine. Most people become adults, and they live a normal life. So don't sit there and say, oh, I can't get through this. You can. However, Goethe, the German writer, wrote a piece called The Sufferings of Young Werther. It was also about the angst of the adolescent, where he thought he would die from the pain of his feelings and his knowledge. Here in our own country, there were many songs about it. One of the most famous novels about it was the character Holden Caulfield in Catcher in the Rye, correct? Okay, it's still taught in colleges. And what that really is about what I'm about to quote for you. And that's Eugene O'Neill's famous statement, which nobody even knows about anymore, where he wrote this. The point is that life in itself is nothing. It is the dream that keeps us fighting and willing and living. Achievement in the narrow sense of possession is a stale finale. The dreams that can be completely realized are not worth dreaming. The higher the dream, the more impossible it is to realize fully. But you would not say, since this is true, that we would dream only of the easily attained. A man wills his own defeat when he pursues the unattainable. But his struggle is his success. He is an example of the spiritual significance which life attains when it aims high enough, when the individual fights all the hostile forces within and without himself to achieve a future of nobler values. When have you last heard this phrase, nobler values? Have you even heard the word nobility, noble, nobler values? Then he concludes, he says, such a figure is necessarily tragic, but to me he is not depressing. He is exhilarating. He may be a failure in our materialistic sense. His treasures are in other kingdoms, yet isn't he the most inspiring of all successes? That's one part of it. The one to take home is success is a stale finale. The struggle is the success by Eugene O'Neill. And it's been one of my mottos all my life. I'm going to actually take this whole thing now, have it written by a calligrapher and put into a frame. This has gotten me through so much in my life. And here I am again at the end of another road, another success. And now I have to go on to yet something new. Because, you know, where do I go now? I'm going to want higher on the list, more books that sell. That'll be great. But what is it going to do for me at the end of the day? That's not what I wrote it for. I wrote Abuse of Power because I wanted, someone asked me, why did you go to fiction? I think it was Governor Patterson who interviewed me on WR. He has a new show. He said, what's your message? Your message is one man can make a difference. In this case, it's Jack Hatfield, my figure in this book, Abuse of Power. Jack is smeared by a liberal hit group funded by a shadowy Austrian billionaire who wants to destroy all conservatives. And so they screw him pretty good by taking his words out of context, and they destroy him as a journalist. And he's working in a deadbeat job in San Francisco when he's called in on a ride-along with the cops of the SFPD. And it's supposed to be just a plain old carjacking, but Jack finds there's C4 explosives in the car, and there was an Arab driving it, and the FBI is covering it up. And that leads him all the way through this whole story. And it's a pulse pounder because it gets faster and better. And he finds out that a group called the Hand of Allah is trying to set off another 9/11 in America, and he tries to stop it, and he races to stop it against all odds. So it's got all the elements of a lot of things in my life in it in a fictionalized form, and I'm very happy with the story. But what's the point of it? Was it to sell you books? Partly. I would lie to you if I said otherwise. I certainly didn't write it so that 15 creeps in a cafe could sit there and say, ooh, you wrote a novel. Let me buy you a nothing. Since they buy each other nothing, there's not a lot of money in the crazy checks. You know, the SDSI is tightening up now in North Beach in these cafes. Some of these people have never worked a day in their lives. They sit there on crazy checks. SDSI. Could you believe it? That there's an entire population of Americans who have never worked a day in their life who collect SDSI crazy checks, and they sit around with communist gibberish every day. You're paying for that as well. I'd put them in a work camp. I'd make them clean the streets of the dirtiest cities in America to collect a Social Security check. I'd give them a broom and a mop and say, get off your fat behind and get out of the cafe and go clean the streets, or you're not getting your check. Let them go complain to Uncle Obama. But then again, I'm not a politician. So here we are. Time flies, doesn't it? Do you think Michelle Obama is abusing her power by telling you not to eat French fries? Look, I'm a degreed man in the field of nutrition. I'm one of the pioneers in our generation in the books of health and nutrition. No one can deny that. I don't care what they say about me. It doesn't matter. I am one of the pioneers, living pioneers in the field of health and nutrition and herbalism. Doesn't matter what your politics are. It's a fact. It's true. So I do understand the benefits of a healthful diet. Not healthy diet, by the way. Everyone uses the wrong word. It's healthful diet. These carrots are healthful. They're not healthy. You're not referring to the health of the carrot. You're referring to the fact that the carrot will induce health in you. So it's a healthful food, not a healthy food. But we won't go into the illiteracy of the RDs out there or the illiteracy of the media. That's an old story. Okay, so we all know that story. But should a government, should a first lady be lecturing you? Is she abusing her power? Or is she doing the right thing? Well, you could say she's doing the right thing. Then why doesn't she practice what she preaches? Okay, you know? So we can talk about that. If you want, it's not a big deal. Solyndra, not only firm to get stimulus and go bankrupt. $500 million, FBI raids them, one of the green companies. Now we learned today four other companies received a piece of the $850 million stimulus, and they filed for bankruptcy. Where's the money? And who in the political structure who got them those grants, monies, got the money in a kickback and a donation through a third or fourth party? Think of the Soprano sporting goods store. You get it? If not, you're going to get it soon. And now I want to give you a message from one of my important sponsors. They're all important. But, you know, listen to me. Talking is what I do for a living. And if you have grandchildren, you're going to leave them a legacy, right? Well, sharing your wisdom through conversation is one of life's most important callings. But what if you suffer from hearing loss yourself? This gift could be lost. Leaving that legacy requires good, great two-way communication. I happen to know of a new medical breakthrough for those with hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. It's a revolutionary solution. It's 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. It's not a hearing aid. Learn about this new breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will cherish for a whole lifetime because of you. How? Well, call 1-800-953-5453. It's free. envoymedical.com. That's 800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today. Do it for yourself. Do it for your grandchildren. Call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com for a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem. You must visit envoymedical.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain. Ain't that a shame?
The most corrupt administration in history. Okay, so we have the Solyndra case, the green company that gets $500 million of stimulus funds and goes bankrupt. FBI raids them last week. Of course, that case will be swept under the rug since we don't come to believe there's actually going to be an investigation. Now, here's another one today for you who are still are true believers of hope and change. The Pentagon, okay, an Air Force general who oversees Air Force Space Command walked into a highly secured room on Capitol Hill a week ago to give a classified briefing to lawmakers and staff, and he dropped a surprise. General William Shelton said the White House tried to pressure him to change his testimony to make it more favorable to a company tied to a large Democratic donor. Big story. The FBI and House Committee are investigating a federal loan guarantee to a now-failed solo firm called Solyndra that is tied to another large Obama fundraiser. Now, the Pentagon is sending out alarm bells about a new wireless project by a satellite broadband company in Virginia called LightSquared, whose majority owner is an investment fund run by Democratic donor Philip Falcone. How do you like that? Some are saying, like Rep. Mike Turner, R. Ohio, there was an attempt to influence the text of the general's testimony and to engage LightSquared in the process in order to bias his testimony. Did you hear this? It gets even worse. So they try to tell a general to make it sound better for them. The White House confirms Wednesday that its OMB suggested changes to the general's testimony. Here's the Office of Management and Budget, which is supposed to be a sort of watchdog group, has now become a wholly owned subsidiary of Chicago. And they go to the general and tell him to change his testimony, too. But they say, no, it's standard what they do. Standard what they do. So now they interview one of the CEOs here, another one. First, they mention one of the characters involved here. I'm sure he's innocent until proven guilty. Democratic donor Philip Falcone is a majority owner. Okay. Now, here's another name for those of you who are into names. You want more names? Here's another name. On Thursday, Light Squared CEO Sanjeev Ahuja, told the Daily Beast that his company was not trying to use politics to affect the regulatory process, and the firm's goal was to expand broadband access across America. I will not read you what he said because I'm not interested in what he said. All I can tell you is that nothing new is there's nothing new under the sun. There was a movie based on an Arthur Miller play. Since I grew up in literature, I know all of them, in the 50s, and it was called All My Sons. Some of you may remember it if you're older. I think Edward G. Robinson plays the corrupt government contractor. All My Sons was written by the great playwright Arthur Miller. There were great playwrights. There aren't anymore. I mentioned two already today, Eugene O'Neill and then Arthur Miller. Arthur Miller was a lifetime leftist, incidentally, and a great playwright, and he wrote a great play, many of them, Death of a Salesman, but he also wrote All My Sons. And this is about a manufacturer during World War II who makes cylinders for fighter planes, engines, okay? And he has several sons. And one of his sons becomes a fighter pilot in World War II, and because the father is a shoddy manufacturer and corrupt, he manufactures defective pistons for the engines in a fighter, and the kid dies. The engine fails, and his own son dies. So there's a famous scene between his surviving son, Burt Lancaster, and the corrupt father, the contractor. You got to hear some of this. Babe, we'll pull it for later on because it make your hair stand up. So don't think this is the first time in history that corrupt contractors have gotten government handouts. It's been going on a long time. Wherever there's money, there's going to be corruption. Look at what went on in Iraq. We still don't know where the money went. So there we go. There it is. Mirror early allegations in the Salandra case, blah, blah, blah. And it's here we are. Mr. Ahuja gave a little more than $30,000 to both the Dems and Republican parties in the last 2 years. Mr. Falcone and his wife have given more than $60,000 in 2009 to the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Mr. Falcone has also given a smattering of money to Repubs. That's nothing. You see how the game works for $60,000, what you can get, if this is true? I told you, it's unbelievable what you get for your money. It's simply the best investment on earth is buying a congressman or a senator. I mean, people don't know what to do with their money. They don't understand there's no interest in the bank. They don't know where to invest. You don't have to be Warren Buffett and get an invitation to the White House and then buy Bank of America stock the next day and make $300 million the day after that. All you got to do is make a donation to a Democrat and tell them exactly what you want. Then you could produce cylinders that don't work. Blah, blah, blah. So now let's play a clip of Burt Lancaster from All My Sons.
What kind of a man are you anyway? Kids hanging in the air by those cylinders, and you knew it. Oh, I was so proud of you. You were helping us to win, and you were worried about your business. Don't you have a country? Don't you think about people? Don't you live in the world? Haven't you got a heart? Oh, what must I do to you? What must I do to you?
Now, that's what you call theater. That's what you call dialogue. In that case, it was a piece of a dialogue. That's what you call emoting. That's what you call something. That's what you call art. Instead of every minute another one with a gold tooth, with the pants on under his behind, with a gun. That's all rubbing his crotch. That's what they have now on HBO. That's a comedian today. That's a comedian and actor. They rub the crotch and have a ring in their nose or a diamond in their ear. That's America today. And they call him an artist or a poet. I have nothing but contempt for the liberal establishment. It literally pours out of me. Jack had always thought that press conferences were about 70% public relations and 30% verifiable truth. But when all was said and done, this one didn't even meet that narrow threshold. Not that anyone noticed. This is the press conference where Jack is smeared by the FBI when they try to cover up the hand of Allah in the carjacking and abuse of power. And he gets smeared. So one a paragraph or two. Tell me if you think this is well written. Real news was a rare commodity these days, and rarer still were real journalists. The image of the investigative reporter who let nothing stand between him and his pursuit of the truth was seen mostly in movies and episodic television shows. Not bad. I think it's pretty good. Is it as good as Arthur Miller? No. Probably better because, whatever, I'm joking. So there it is. They try to blame the bombing on a white supremacist group in Northern California when they had nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it whatsoever. So what do you want me to do? How about the restaurant scene when they're eating in the restaurant with the dog? That's cute. That's family oriented. and Alcatraz Island. How about that, Alcatraz? I both looked up to see Danny Pescatore emerging from the kitchen with a grin on his face. There is no Danny Pescatore. A short, squat, powerful Sicilian who, along with his brother Carlo, had been running Pagliacci's for over 30 years now, ever since their parents had retired. Pagliacci's on the Wharf was a San Francisco institution. There is no such thing on the Wharf. There are no institutions. See, it's all fiction, I'm trying to tell you. I do not eat on Fisherman's Wharf. There is no Pagliacci. There is no Pescatore. There's no restaurant that I eat down there. So it's all fiction. You understand this or not? Jack Hatfield in Abuse of Power. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Why didn't you tell them? You knew they were no good. You knew they wouldn't hold up.
Well, it was too late. The newspapers, it was all over the front pages. 21 planes crashed. It was too late, I tell you. They came with handcuffs to the factory. Now, what could I do? I ask you, what could I do, Chris? I did it for you.
That's one of the scenes from All My Sons, written by Arthur Miller, about a corrupt Defense Department contractor, as I said to you, who built defective parts, pistons, I believe, for airplane engines, and his one son dies, and that's his other son, played by Burt Lancaster. That was Edward Arnold. And by the way, the reason the quality is so good is it comes from the days of radio drama. That was from a radio play. Imagine such a thing, radio plays. I actually hearken back to the days of radio drama, radio plays. I grew up on them. It's interesting. I mean, it's very interesting why I'm so good at radio and why people love the show. I grew up on radio. I'm sorry to tell you. I mean, I think I was born before television. I wasn't born before television, I'm saying, but before TV became in everybody's home. You know, I remember when the first ones were introduced in the Bronx. We were the first in the apartment building to get a little teeny screen, and they put a magnifying glass on it. And all the kids used to come over to the apartment and sit in the living room floor and watch the Howdy Doody show through the magnifying glass. Can you imagine how far back that is? It's unbelievable. Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting. So here we are, sitting here watching the world go round. May I read you a page from Abuse of Power? Because I like reading from it. The Beat Cafe seemed like an odd place for a meet. It was located next to a strip club in North Beach, and Jack thought of it as really nothing more than a hamburger joint with a gimmick. Done up like an old 1950s coffee house, its walls were adorned with huge photographs of beatniks now long forgotten. Pay a small fee and you could walk through the restaurant to the back, climb a set of wooden steps, and find yourself in a tiny museum full of more photographs, newspaper articles, and even furniture, all centering around the pre-hippie beat generation. The museum had a kind of quiet, reverential charm, but was the last place Jack would have picked to rendezvous with a source. If anything, he would have chosen the Etna Cafe, which was just around the corner. At least you could get a decent drink there. He checked his watch. A vintage Hamilton Gilbert he'd inherited from his father that could well have been part of this museum. It was nearly 9 p.m. He stood staring at a stark, moody portrait of an attractive blonde when he felt a presence next to him, Bob Copeland. Now, by the way, let me pause. Bob Copeland is the character based upon the real-life story of the man who wound up in a dumpster in Delaware. "It's always about the girl, isn't it?" asked the rough, smoky voice. Carolyn Cassidy. She was the real driving force, you know, married to Neil Cassidy and sleeping with Jack Kerouac. Copeland was a stout man with a bulldog face who would always remind Jack of one of his heroes, Winston Churchill, without the accent, of course. "That must have made for an interesting home life," Jack said. Copeland waved an arm. All this nonsense destroyed Kerouac. He was a true American literary giant who despised the so-called beat movement that hacks like Ginsberg ruthlessly promoted. He looked at Jack. "Did you know Kerouac voted for Nixon?" "I had no idea." Copeland shrugged. "It's all ancient history. Which is what we'll both be a few years down the line. Think anyone will ever erect a museum in our honor?" "Doubtful," Jack said. A former Defense Department official, Vietnam combat veteran, and a leading proponent of cyber defense, Copeland was a member of a conservative think tank who divided his time between Washington and San Francisco, Jack's most reliable anonymous source, back in the days of truth tellers. He had a direct line into the D.C. nerve center, and Jack had been all too happy to mine that connection. The man also had a love affair with clandestine theatrics, which is why he always chose their meeting places. That usually meant the Museum of Modern Art or the Academy of Sciences, but maybe Copeland was looking for a change of pace these days. Jack couldn't be sure. He hadn't seen or heard from the man in over 2 years. You're looking pretty good, Jack. How you been? Can't complain. Copeland chuckled. The hell you can't. You're still getting death threats? Nothing I can't handle. At least you've still got the old self-confidence. That and a pocket full of cash is all a man really needs. Everything else is dead weight. He shot Jack a glance. Speaking of which, you see much of the ex these days? Not really. Jack didn't exactly think of Rachel as dead weight, but he had no interest in seeing her. Jack met her while doing a segment for one of his shows, The World of the Runway Model. She was tall, almost 5'9", with raven hair and green eyes. After interviewing her for the program, he took her for a quick coffee at a local cafe on North Beach. She immediately struck him as more than just a body. What did you learn from your parents, she asked him, out of nowhere it seemed, but that was the way she was, inquisitive in ways he never quite fathomed. And she was direct. There was nothing she would not ask. They quickly became inseparable, joined in body and in mind, but they were also talkers, big time, who hashed everything out or talked it to death, whichever came first. In the end, they realized that neither of them was really listening to the other. Two alphas competing for the same turf. I'll pause right here. Eventually, she leaves him and dates a tax attorney. I'm sorry, it's semi-comedic in a certain way, but it's all set in a bookstore that doesn't exist in North Beach in San Francisco, Abuse of Power, and various and others. Has anyone read the book yet? Anybody read anything in the book they like? What's your favorite political line that I write through one of my characters? New York, Jimmy, no, that's too political right now. Florida, Phil, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you've been making quite a few references about journalists and reporters lately on your show. My question is, do you think Richard Nixon could have gotten away with Watergate with the quality of reporters and journalists we have now, where on the other hand, would Obama and Michelle still be in the White House if they had to deal with the journalists and reporters we had back in the early 70s?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's got its own answer built into the question, but the fact of the matter is, the reason that Nixon wouldn't get away with it today is because the vermin calling themselves journalists attack every conservative, America-loving politician or broadcaster viciously and repeatedly. For example, they're now putting out a smear story about Sarah Palin having used cocaine based upon no sources whatsoever. And this is passing for an NBC News story. That's to show you one thing, and yet they never report on an Obama scandal. So we're living in the most corrupt times in American history, and we have the most debased media in American history, and we have a government media complex that is all left-wing all the time like never before. So what more do you need to know? Of course that's how we got the imposter in the White House and how he keeps his job. Phil, from Florida, which is why I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power. What else do we have here? Let us go to Frank in New York on WOR. Frank, go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, being miserable is actually the natural state of affairs for man.
That's right. You're my kind of guy. That's right.
Yeah, and you proved it many times this past week by citing Ecclesiastes. One of the first words in that book is meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And he develops that theme in Ecclesiastes from the beginning to the end. And the reason for it is because one of the lines in Ecclesiastes says that God has set eternity in the heart of man. So when you have temporal success in this world, we're eternal beings. It's not enough. Augustine said, "Our hearts are restless until they rest in Thee, O Lord." So that's the problem. And
it's also very beautiful theology. I mean, this is theologically very interesting to me. I feel as though I'm speaking with a wise man, Frank. Obviously, you're a very spiritual man, probably very religious as well. Am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. And I think
are you of the Catholic faith?
And when Michael, when you say
Frank, I'm sorry, Frank, are you of the Catholic faith?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Very interesting. So where do you derive your peace of mind from?
Well, I'll tell you, Michael. Well, let me first say, your book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, is a fantastic book, and I would encourage anybody who didn't read it to read it.
It's unbelievable.
I think the mental disorder that results from liberalism is a side effect of liberalism. I believe that liberalism is essentially a spiritual disorder because liberals love everything that God hates, and God hates everything that liberals love.
Oh, Frank. Oh, this is good. This is very refreshing. This is better than eating a mint.
And also, I derive my peace, Michael, from God. You just go to God, whatever happens in life, whether it's good or bad. And in the New Testament, it says he gives you the peace that surpasses all understanding. And it's true. I've experienced it many, many times in my life, and it's a truly wonderful thing.
But as a Catholic, aren't you taught that man is basically burdened with original sin?
Yes.
Okay. So even though you are born with original sin, according to your religious teachings and beliefs, there's a way out of it.
Of course. God is always the way out of it. Always. You know,
I'm going to tell you something funny. I have this ongoing legal suit against England where I've been smeared and I can't get my name off the list. I'm like a fish on a hook. No matter which way I twist, the hook goes in deeper. It's cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars. The fake government in England that was supposed to get me off turned out to be liars through and through, as you well know. And, you know, some days it gets so bad, I don't know what to do. And, you know, when I stop struggling, you know what I say? It's God's will. There's a reason for it. The pain goes away. I completely feel no pain whatsoever.
Michael, you got the answer for it right in the Book of Psalms.
No, I know that. Well, I know that. I mean, I didn't get to this age by not having some techniques or tools to get through these agonies. Correct, Frank?
Right, of course. But, Michael, God says in Psalms, cease striving and know that I am God. Give yourself some peace. Don't let the English drive you nuts. Forget about that. It's not even important. And the level of success that you achieved in your life is staggering. Most individuals who have achieved truly great, the pinnacles of their profession, people like Beethoven and Michelangelo, were tragic figures. And those are the most creative people on the planet. I mean, that type, you know. And
Frank, are you a father?
No, I never. Had
I don't mean. I don't mean a priest. I mean, do you have a children?
No, I have no children.
Well, you would be a wonderful teacher. You would have been a fine father. The way you speak is so reassuring. What do you do, Frank?
I'm a musician. I'm a jazz musician.
Oh man, I should have gone in that direction. I had no way to know.
Yeah, that's an animal.
So, what instrument? What instrument do you play, Frank?
Guitarist.
Guitarist.
Guitarist. Yes.
So you played in clubs all your life, right?
Oh yeah, I played. Yes, of course. Many.
Did you play? Did you play like in the old Lenny Bruce days, Village Vanguard, Village Gate?
Yeah, no, but no, I'm in my late 50s, Michael. So.
Oh, you're a young guy. You're a young guy.
Yeah, I'm younger. You know, a little too young for that. But
yeah.
No, I did a lot of club day gigs and everything like that there.
So you've been around everything imaginable. You've been around the drugs. You've been around the booze. The whole deal, right?
And I grew up in Greenwich Village in Manhattan, you know.
Oh, you're a West Villager.
Yes. And,
well, that was a beautiful neighborhood. It's always been a beautiful neighborhood, one of my favorites. Always loved it.
Yeah.
Always loved that neighborhood. Always loved it. Always fond of it. Washington Square will always stay in my heart. I could ask a million questions about it, but I won't because it's a little on the sidetrack. I'm going to ask you one question. Why do you listen to my radio show?
Because you have been gifted, Michael, with gifted insight. The insight that you have in life and in the world can only come from one source, and that one source is God. This is why liberals are so tormented. I have a few friends now who are atheists, and I must tell you, Michael, they're the most angriest, miserable people on the planet. And that's because they're distancing themselves further and further from God. I try to give them the gospel. They don't even want to hear it. But a guy like you, who I know believes in God, could only get you. In my personal opinion, Michael, I think you're a genius. And I think, I know for a fact that gift can only come from God, because he is the author of all gifts. It says that in the New Testament. And I'm not saying this to butter you up. Believe me.
No, I'm sitting here almost like, where's this coming from? Obviously, I like what you're saying because it's all complimentary. But there's a truth in what you're saying from your own heart, which is what's resonating on the radio. People know what's... See, they can hear the truth. You know, as Hemingway said, the truth has a certain ring to it. So I'm saying your truth is your truth, but you're not saying it for any other reason other than you believe it. But you certainly could be doing something else other than listening to this show, correct?
Oh, absolutely, of course. I enjoy listening to you because you go right to the heart of them. You know, there's no pretense with you. And
if I were a musician, if I were a jazz musician, Frank, what instrument would I be playing?
Oh, my goodness. Are you? Well, you have that stream of consciousness, Michael. So I would say probably more of a saxophone type.
Bingo! I swear to God, I knew you were going to say it. I'd definitely be an alto sax, not a baritone sax, where you step right in like Coltrane, the greatest genius on the horn ever, right or wrong? I mean, do you still revere that guy?
Absolutely. John Coltrane
right.
is fantastic.
The best, the absolute best. But he could step out of nowhere with one note and bring you right into his world of music.
Yeah,
like nobody on earth. Nobody on earth. I can't say I modeled my show on him because I do words. I don't do music, and I have no facility to even read music or play music. I have no capacity for languages nor music. Would you believe that, Frank?
No. Well,
Frank,
music.
You and I could talk forever over a coffee or a drink. It'd be amazing. I doubt that it will ever happen in real life because it never does. But, Frank, I'm going to do two things. One, I'm sending you a free copy of my novel, Abuse of Power, and I'd love to hear what you think of it. And I want you to give your email to my producer, who'll send it to me, and I want to start a little correspondence. After you read it, okay, you'll send him your review, and then I'll get back to you. Is that good enough? Because I want to see it. I want to see it. And what I want to do on the way out of this particular segment, guys, while Frank's hanging to get his number and all, get some Coltrane up if you haven't gotten it already. I mean, there's a couple of incredible ones. You know the ones I love. And girls, you don't have to be stoned to love jazz. You don't have to be a stew bum drunk to be a musician. You can love God and you could be a musician and you can love God and be Einstein. I'll be right back. Train, Savage Nation. Now, those of you, what I'm going to explain, how can you explain genius? You know, I think I'm going to start listening to Coltrane in the morning to get my mind moving in another direction. Unbelievable. I really haven't listened in years. I lost the CD on one of my boats. Got moldy like in a cabinet. I forgot how great it was. I mean, music did pull me out of a lot of... That's what I'm going to do now, music. Listen to some music, Coltrane. When I really got into the doldrums, I used to listen to Beethoven. Beethoven's Ninth is the equivalent of shock therapy. It's electroshock therapy for the soul. If you get it on a great set of, you know, headphones, there's nothing that can compare with that one. Oh, man. You got to stop it because I'm going to lose the ability to talk. When I hear this and I really let my mind get into it, I go down on my knees and I get down on the floor and I start to weep because I realize a human being wrote that. It was in a man's head. And then I compare that to rappers with their pants hanging under their behinds, rubbing their crotch with bling in their nose, who are held up as role models for our children. I compare the debasement where we've gone from George Washington to Barack Obama. We've gone from Beethoven to the rappers. I mean, it's unbelievable to me the debasement of Western civilization, and that's why I find myself incapable of words. Incapable of words. Except I really never run out of words. Solyndra not sold firm to hit rock bottom despite stimulus funding. Okay, now they're blaming the Chinese. They gave them $800 billion in economic stimulus. Now one company after another is coming to light, have gone bankrupt, these solar companies. But so far they haven't gone to the next step is, did the money get spent and go upstream? How much of it went up to the congressman and to the Senate level and higher, higher and higher and higher? Was the White House involved? All the companies now are blaming the Chinese. They say they could not compete with the Chinese competitors. And now a hack comes out. Deputy Secretary of Energy Daniel Poneman, some spokesmouth, says an editorial in USA Today. He blames China for the failure of U.S. solar energy manufacturers to compete. This is astounding. The government media complex, Michael Savage, 1998. The Commonwealth Club, one of the greatest speeches of my life. You never heard of it. Government media complex. Well, anyhow, there's another big hour across America. I ask you to go out to bookstores and keep abuse of power right to the top of the list. It's important to me and you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Questions for the Savage Nation. Obama wants to raise taxes on the so-called rich, except his friends, like General Electric. He says anyone making over $200,000 as a family is rich. Should this group pay more taxes? Should Obama be impeached for his backdoor amnesty program for illegal aliens from La Raza? What is the most obscure tax you've ever experienced? Michelle Obama was caught apparently whispering these words at a memorial for 9/11 as policemen and firemen were wrapping a flag. She whispered to her husband, "All this just for a flag?" If you've seen the video, do you believe that's what she said and then her husband's eyes rolled? National restaurant chains Red Lobster and the Olive Garden have succumbed to pressure from Michelle Obama and removed French fries from the menu for kids. Michelle Obama, while doing this, has publicly stated that her favorite food are French fries. Do you believe Michelle Obama is a hypocrite? If you own a restaurant, how do you feel about the changes Michelle Obama is trying to make in the way people eat? And finally, we've been talking about what's your worst restaurant horror story involving a liberal trying to dictate, well, what's your worst restaurant horror story? Obama allies are saying it's time to wake up. Crushing defeats for the Democratic Party in two special congressional elections just this Tuesday, an economy that's showing no signs of reviving, and Obama's declining approval ratings have become too much for the most diehard of the liars to defend, even for some of the party's most zealous liars. The president's support is eroding across the board, and the coalition of minorities, liberals, young fools, and union thugs that helped elect him in 08 is falling apart. Bill Burton, a former White House spokesmouth, said Democrats should be very nervous. They need to put on their war paint and get ready for what is going to be a very difficult battle. Unless activists really engage and recognize the stakes of this fight, it's going to be impossible for the president to win. What does he mean by that? What does he mean by stakes of this fight? What does he mean put on their war paint? Well, the fact of the matter is, let's look at what actually happened. A New York City district held by demon cats since 1923 fell to the Republicans in a special election on Tuesday. That was in Weiner's seat. A Republican political novice, businessman Bob Turner, framed the vote in the heavily Jewish district as a referendum on Obama, raising questions about the level of his support with a key Democratic constituency, the Jewish vote, and he won. In Nevada, Republican Mark Amodei cruised into a congressional seat in the battleground state of Nevada in a special election Democrats had hoped would expose a backlash against the GOP over its proposed Medicare overhaul. It did not. Republicans won. The RNC raised more than $8 million last month, marking its best August in a non-election year. So, in other words, even Obama's approval rating in California, traditionally a left-wing fanatic state, slipped to 46%, which means it's probably 26%, since that was reported by the lying field poll. In other words, Obama's advisors are lying to themselves if they think he's going to just dance into the office again. But I don't underestimate these people, because although Obama is slipping, his handlers are even more slippery. Let us look at what else is on michaelsavage.com. Of course, I need you to go to the bookstore after this show and buy Abuse of Power and keep it on the list and send a message to Hollywood and to the publishers that we want conservative action heroes. Mob the bookstores and buy several copies of my new novel, Abuse of Power, today. Remember, a man like me only comes along once every 1,000 years, and this is the first novel I've ever published. If you think it's just a hackneyed book, read some of the reviews from Amazon.com, reviews I had nothing to do with. Here's one. Finally, says one reader, a work of fiction is written that is not afraid to go against the political correctness of today. I'm so sick and tired of hypocritical crap fiction that adds in little preachy liberal comments about being pro-green when the book is made of paper and plastic, or a book that calls Muslim terrorist fighters like they're not really terrorists. Dr. Savage in Abuse of Power goes all out, no holds barred, on what is considered politically correct in this book and is not afraid to call it like it is. Abuse of Power wastes no time in getting right into the action. You'll love it if you like a thriller with a bit of mystery. Would love to see Abuse of Power as a movie. That's one happy reader right there. There are many others. All can be found on michaelsavage.com. Finally, as a news story, the internet is buzzing with Michelle Obama putting down firemen, firefighters, policemen at a 9/11 ceremony as they were wrapping the American flag in a ceremony. She was seen to have whispered all this just for a flag to her nodding, eye-rolling husband, the imposter president. Here are two cases of America haters who have been put into power by America's nefarious puppeteers. Did Michelle really say all this just for a flag? Did she really have to say all of this just for a flag? Don't we know it from her attitude? Play the clip.
The federal government has to step up today, get jobs created, and then the corporations will stop sitting on the $2 trillion that they're hoarding right now. If the private sector isn't going to do it, the public sector ought to do it, ought to take the lead. And then the private sector and people will start spending money.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. Finally, if you want something positive, go to MichaelSavage.com, and you'll see a color photo show, 1940s life in New York City. You'll see what a different world it was. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Government debt was downgraded because of the lack of confidence in the federal government's, the Congress's, ability to resolve these issues. The Republicans ought to accept responsibility for the fact that we're going to have to pay much further, much greater interest, and it's affecting international financial currency. You know, they write their own history, unfortunately.
New York WOR Ralph, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
This man, despite what he does, Michael, will win big in 2012. Mark my words, because the grand scheme, which you pointed out many a time, 8 years Dem, 8 years Republican, we're right on schedule for 4 more years of this guy, and that's the plain truth, Michael.
Well, that's a generic statement. Do you have any idea how he's going to pull it off? Because I do.
Well, I think what you just said about Romney. He's the most likely candidate, let's face it.
Yes.
And he just does not have the courage or whatever it takes to confront him the way you just outlined. he'll play politics.
I would say that Romney is too polite. He's a check pants Republican, country club Republican. He doesn't have the fire in the belly. He's not a real fighter. He may be intelligent. He may be good. He's a fine man. He's a good family man. But that doesn't make for a good leader. And I don't think he has the guts, frankly, to stand up to Obama.
I couldn't agree more, but I'll tell you this. The Biden with his comments offended me to such an extent. You know, it's ironic. We can't call the terrorists, the actual terrorists, terrorists, but yet Biden comes out and calls these great American people who are doing the right thing. He dares to use that word, terrorism.
Biden should be forced to step down. He should be thrown out of office for this. He's known as a loose cannon. He's known for shooting his mouth off. But this, I think, has gone so far over the edge. You know, you touched on a raw nerve for me. This government, this corrupt government, won't call the Islamo-fascist terrorists. They call them everything but terrorists. And yet they call the Tea Party people terrorists. So I ask you then, who is the real enemy of the middle class in this country?
Well, we hear them every day. I heard the main culprit the just this afternoon. But let me tell you, Michael, in my circle, I work in the arts here in the city in Manhattan. The allegiance to this man is unwavering. He can do no wrong. I don't care if he robbed a bank in broad daylight.
Right.
These people would turn their back and they
yes,
would
I understand him. That's because he's a far left radical cool guy. And let's not forget there's a racial element in what you're talking about. Everyone wants to look the other way. But that's a huge element in his popularity amongst the elites. Am I right about that?
Well, you know you are. And, you know, they
well, because I know how they think. And I know the knee-jerk liberal. And I know exactly what they react to. They think that they're independent of mind. But, in fact, they're the most conformist amongst all of us. The liberal is a very conforming being. They are afraid to say the obvious. They are afraid to speak out against the pack mentality. And they generally are knee-jerk in almost all their responses.
They could never operate amongst their cronies if they were to tell the truth, you see, because it's a little club, you know. They have to go back and face their...
But do you actually think Steven Spielberg wants to pay higher taxes, for example? Let's go to the top of the heap. You think Katzenberg and Spielberg want to pay more taxes on the billions that they make?
No, but at their parties, at their elitist parties, they have to show their face, so they can't come out and tell the truth. You understand that?
Well, wait, Spielberg was just seen in Sardinia aboard his 200 and some foot yacht. Let's start with that. The man earned it. He has a yacht over 240 feet, and on it he had some of his friends from Hollywood, including his adopted goddaughter Gwyneth Paltrow. So he's leading the high life, and he earned it. Okay. Brilliant director, very popular director. Do you think he wants to give up his yacht for Obama's dreams?
Of course not. But, you know, it's something like it's so deep in the psyche, Michael. It's so deeply ingrained.
Do you think that cheapskate stereotype, despicable disgrace of the Jews, Larry David, wants to pay an extra dime in taxes?
I think that he, I to me, Larry David can make me laugh once in a while, I'll be honest with you. But I tell you, they're so politically stupid.
Larry David is the epitome of the self-hating Jew. Larry David is the Stepan. You remember the character I talked about, the black actor in the 1940s, Stepan Fetchit? Remember that reference?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, Stepan Fetchit made a mockery of the black male, and the white people loved him for it because he reinforced negative stereotypes. So Woody Allen does it. Larry David does it. They reinforce all the negative stereotypes of the Jew. And this is exactly what the Jewish people should avoid, but instead they go in flocks to laugh at themselves.
Well, it's a darn shame, Michael. And like I said, before, you outlined it so perfectly. When you say about that it's all preordained, 8 years Dem, 8 years.
Yeah, well, all right, that is true, but I don't think I've described what the Dems are going to do in order to make sure that they win this time. Yes, the Republicans are putting up a straw dog again in Romney. There's no question about it. You remember the last election? What happened? Romney was leading the pack, and then through some kind of secret votes during the primary, that old warhorse McCain, the shame, suddenly beat Romney, and Romney disappeared. Do you remember that little maneuver?
I sure do. Very fishy.
All right. Very fishy. Now, why did they pick McCain to run against Obama? They knew that McCain would lose. They knew that no matter what McCain did, even if he surged in the polls, eventually they could rely upon him to shoot himself in the foot. And he did that. He did just that. Remember, he did it over and over again. Remember in the last debate, people were begging him at town hall meetings, go tough on Obama. And he got up and he said, oh, he's no Marxist. He's a nice family man. He's a nice man. Do you remember McCain doing that?
I certainly do, and that there's, and you know, if he had just turned, you know, we were ready to we needed someone like that, even though he was a little over the hill, Michael, you know, a little past his prime. But you know, I would have preferred him over what we have right now. But you know what?
Well, I voted for McCain because at least I knew where he was born. At that time, we knew he served the country, albeit I said last week it was he who set the rocket off on the forest door, which killed so many men and almost sank the ship. It was an accident. He hit the wrong lever, and he did serve 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton and suffered violently for it. And you have to have sympathy for the man. But nevertheless, we would have been better off, I think, even with a quisling Republican McCain rather than this fellow named Obama. But look, that's past history. What I'm saying is, the past predicts the future. They're going to do it again. They're going to either run Romney, who will lose, or they'll run someone like Romney, who will lose. There's no question that a real revolutionary conservative cannot get to the winner's gate in the Republican Party. It's impossible.
It'll be some milquetoast candidate who will be up there just to get shot down again, and we're in for another 4 years. And
so, in other words, Bush had. Did you hear my thing on limousines? Bush had 238 limos. Obama, the man of the poor who likes to cut the costs, raised it to 412 limousines. And each limousine cost the taxpayers $4.6 million in order to buy its security, gas, parking, insurance, etc. How can the government spend $4.6 million per limousine? That alone could sink his candidacy. I could beat him in a debate with that fact alone because I wouldn't let it go. You take two or three facts like this and you don't let him go like a pit bull. You keep repeating them in the debate. No matter what he says, no matter what the tricksters who are the so-called moderators throw at you, you go back to this last question. No matter what they say to you, you say, no, I'm not moving on. I want him to answer that question. And I don't care what you say. You're part of the government media complex. So ask it all you want because I'm not answering it. Make Obama answer how he spends $4.6 million on a limo. And let me tell you something else, Mr. The moderator, shut your trap, because I represent the American people and you're just a pimp. Now answer this. How come General Electric paid no taxes on $5.3 billion, Mr. Moderator? It would bring the House down. He'd win the election, right or wrong?
Well, they'll go so esoteric and so out of the, they'll so intellectualize it to such an extent. They can't simplify it like you just did. That's the problem. If a plain man with brains in his head would get up there and just say what's evident to all of us and just be forthright in the way he speaks, he could destroy him. But
the plain truth would win in any debate against this sophist.
Savage.
Obama has this so-called jobs bill out there, but the fact of the matter is it's not a jobs bill, it's a tax bill. And the question is, what are Republicans proposing about creating jobs in this country? Can they really do anything differently? Well, joining us today on the Savage Nation to talk about this is Illinois Republican Congressman and Captain in the Air National Guard, Adam Kinzinger. Congressman Kinzinger, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, it's great to talk to you. Thanks.
Okay, so briefly explain to the listeners the so-called jobs bill that Obama proposes.
You know, look, when Obama came and he spoke to Congress, I was truly at first hopeful that we could at least say, okay, well, here are some areas we agree on, and let's at least move forward with those, you know, trade agreements and things along that line. But the more I look at it, the more I realize really what the jobs bill is it's a carbon copy of Stimulus 1. Now, he calls it a jobs bill. Truthfully, I think we need to call it Stimulus 2 or Stimulus Junior. That's exactly what this is. It's the same pattern that we saw in Stimulus 1 that didn't work. And I've heard Democrats say, in fact, that, you know, the problem with Stimulus 1 is it wasn't big enough. Well, okay, I disagree, but let's say that's true. This one's a lot smaller. So, you know, this doesn't make sense that, once again, you know, this is Washington trying to ride in on its white horse to save the day, and the American people are saying, we just want Washington out of the way.
Well, why is it that Obama and Democrats keep trying the same things over and over again in regards to trying to fix the economy, even though we all know that these plans don't work?
Because I don't think they know any different. I mean, you keep in mind the mindset here. The mindset is the federal government can solve every problem. You know, if you got a little tummy ache, it's the federal government's job to come in and give you your medicine. And this is all they know. They, you know, they've looked up at this idea for years, this idea of creating a great society, of spending more and more money and giving everybody everything. You know, at the very base, there are a lot of people that believe that those with a lot of money should give a lot of money more so that people without it can have their money. And so when you look at, I mean, it's really irrelevant whether it has worked or not to them, because to them it's just a matter of this is their philosophy. It's what they believe. And I think some of them probably truly have the best of intentions in mind, but it's wrong. I mean, it really is wrong. We have to get back to free market principles that we've left a long time ago.
Specifically, what are the congressional Republicans proposing to fix this economic crisis and create jobs?
Well, look, when you look at what we're doing here in Congress, everybody, you know, has gotten used to the last 20 or 30 years, this idea of a big comprehensive bill. We want a big comprehensive bill. Well, we don't believe that. We believe in there are areas where we can definitely create an environment for job creation. And I'll get into that, but let me just say also quickly, the federal government does not, cannot, can never create a job. They've never created a single job in their life. They've made jobs, but they've never created them. Creation is done in the free market. We can create an environment for that. One of the things is energy production. I mean, right now you have a lot of energy in the United States that's going untapped. And we're sending money to the Middle East, to our enemies in the Middle East, and our energy is going untapped. That's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs. The overregulation that exists in the cement industry, for instance, the EPA has come out with a rule, a maximum achievable standards rule, that is estimated to cost the cement industry 20% of its jobs. 20%. So let's say we get this stimulus to end. What are we going to be buying the cement now from China? So I have a bill that we're leading that basically would push that rule off a few years and give the cement company more time to adapt. I mean, it's this overregulation, this overspending, this lack of confidence. That's what we have to reverse. It's not going to be another white horse and another comprehensive plan.
What would you propose to create jobs in this country?
I'm very passionate about energy security, and so I think energy can do a couple things. Number one, it can begin to divest us from, you know, what we're investing in the Middle East and you know, the fact that we have to be engaged there in some cases because of the cost of oil. It now allows us to produce oil here in a bigger way. It gives us royalties on that oil. One of the concerns is, you know, the Alaskan pipeline. The capacity of the pipeline has been lower and lower, and eventually it's going to get in danger of freezing over because there's less that Alaska is producing. So we need to open ANWR. But energy, I think, can be a huge driver of American job creation. And the other thing, you know, Rick Perry said it well when he said, my job is to make my job much less important in your life. And I think that's the best thing we can do in D.C. is protect you, provide your infrastructure, and then get out of your way and let you blaze your own trail.
Where do you think the super committee needs to start in regards to cutting the deficit?
Well, I obviously everybody talks about fraud, waste, and abuse. That's just such a small percent of the huge budget, though. So let's get into that. Let's look at what we need to do really is start from the very basics and say, what is the role of government? Not what is government doing today, but what is the role of government? Define that, figure out what you need to carry out that role, and anything you spend beyond that is money that could potentially be cut. But the reality of it is we are tinkering around the edges. When you talk about defense and you talk about discretionary spending, which is the money that is spent basically to run federal agencies, that's what we budget every year. It's only about $1 trillion. I say only $1 trillion. The rest of the money, the over $2 trillion, comes from that mandatory spending, autopilot spending, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. When people talk about, you know, House Republicans, yeah, we cut spending, but the overall federal budget grew anyway. That's true, but it's growing because of that autopilot spending that unless we change the law, we can't do anything about. I mean, that's just set in law. So I think the super committee really needs to look at Medicare, figure out how to make it sustainable in the long run. Same thing with Social Security. Talk about energy exploration. They need to talk about eliminating redundancies in the government. And then ultimately, everybody's going to have to make some kind of sacrifice. Even in Congress, we've cut our own budget by double-digit percentages. So everybody's going to have to make a sacrifice, and that's where the super committee can get into the details of it.
As a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, what damage would defense cuts do to our military?
Tremendous damage. Look, I know a lot of people disagree with my vote. I voted for this debt limit bill. It was a hard vote. I actually felt very – it was one of the toughest votes I've taken in Congress, one of the toughest I hope to ever have to take. But, you know, the initial cuts to defense in that initial $900 billion was what was identified as basically fraud, waste, abuse, and redundancy. I'm okay with holding the military accountable to fraud, waste, and abuse and redundancy. I've seen it in my own job. But when we go, if we talk about defense anymore, if we talk about further defense cuts, we are talking about cutting into real programs that save American lives and make us the strongest country in the world. And that's when it gets very dangerous. Keep in mind, a big percent of defense budget, too, is in paying soldiers. It's in paying retirement and health care costs. It's not just buying new toys for the military. You look at the Air Force, for instance, and the Air Force is having a hard time even buying its F-22s or F-35s to modernize its fleet against China. A lot of needs. We're fighting two different wars. There's a symmetric possibility, so that would be like an us against another military with the same equivalent ability, or an asymmetric, which is what we're fighting now, which is basically people in caves.
Congressman Kinzinger, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, it was great to talk to you. Jobs.gop.gov is a great website, again, just to see the House Republicans, what we've been working on to get people back to work.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, let me just say that what you are suggesting is anecdotal. The plural of anecdote is not data. There may be somebody that's told you or spoken out about this, but our caucus is very unified in support of the American Jobs Act and the fact that it is paid for.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Now, you know, the Bay Area, I live here in the San Francisco area. I love the place. I love the place. And I'm considering getting a group of people together with a class action lawsuit against a city for damaging the health of people through marijuana smoke. How do you like that? You can get a contact high for marijuana smoke. What if you don't want to smoke marijuana? What if you don't want to inhale marijuana? And yet you're forced to because these dummies in the city have said, oh, yeah, it's medical marijuana, and you let these jerks run around smoking in the street, and you have to inhale it. I've smelled it in restaurants, and it makes me sick. Why not sue the restaurant? Why not sue the city? Sue the bus company. Let them understand that it runs two ways, and these left-wing fools who are fooling nobody with their medical marijuana lie are going to find out one day that they're going to be hitting the pocketbook the same way they got where they are today. And let me tell you something else. This all started in 2006 when George Soros funded the Medical Marijuana Initiative in California and the Medical Marijuana Initiative in Arizona, and I argued with one of his stooges. There is no such thing as medical marijuana. It is the biggest lie of our age. Because the fact of the matter is, if cannabinol has any medical effect whatsoever, then you can take it in a pill form. And I'll tell you something else. If you're inhaling marijuana smoke, you're poisoning your body and you're deteriorating your health. You're not improving it. It's absolute rubbish to say that inhaling anything in a hot smoke is good for you. It's a lie. I've gone down the list 100 times with you. Medical marijuana is no different than marijuana. Is that correct? Sure. Just that they've come up with a new way to get it legalized, right? So now ask yourself if marijuana is good for you or bad for you. Marijuana is filled with toxins. Marijuana has some toxins in larger amounts than you will find in the equivalent amount in a tobacco cigarette. We've all heard how bad cigarettes are for you. I don't smoke. I don't like cigarettes. They killed my father. They killed my grandfather. I also must tell you that some of the toxic components that you find from burning tobacco you find when you burn marijuana. And yet if you tell this to the average moron out there, they'll think that you're crazy. Oh, it's all natural. Marijuana's natural. Well, tobacco's natural too. Strychnine is also natural. It's a very natural poison. So just because it's natural doesn't mean that it's not toxic. You know, people don't understand that just because it's natural doesn't mean it's not toxic. I'll give you another example because I have a master's degree in pharmacology. You may not know that. It's medical botany, but we really studied pharmacology, and so I know an awful lot about it. If you look at how South American hunters hunt monkeys in trees, what they do is they dip their arrows in a neurotoxin. The neurotoxin is called curare, right? And what it does is when they hit the monkey with the arrow and it's dipped in curare, it relaxes the monkey's muscles. All the muscles no longer function. They can't grip the tree. The monkey falls down out of the tree. And, of course, they capture the poor animal and they kill it and eat it. Well, what does it have to do with anything? I'm trying to show you something. That any medicine is also a potential poison. It's only a matter of dosage. That could be even a salt. I can kill you with the salt on your table if the dosage was high enough. I could give you a stroke. So you see what they say, one man's meat is another man's poison. But the fact is it's all a matter of dosage. And it's dosage which separates a poison from a drug. And so therefore you have to understand that marijuana is a toxic poison in almost any dosage. And if there was really any medical benefit from it, and some will say, yeah, relieves this, relieves that, I have an appetite, before I didn't, and all you're wrong. You know and I know that you could take the active component from marijuana, which is Marinol, which is the drug Marinol, which contains the cannabinoids, which are allegedly helpful. You don't have to inhale that toxic smoke, which destroys your lungs and destroys the linings of your throat. Period, end of story, don't call me. I know I'm going to get all of the druggies now calling. Every druggie in the country listening is going to start defending their addiction. Same thing all over again. Tyler, CJ, Tyler, Texas, CJ, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, sir, faith. Faith is all it is, Michael. That's all we have. And I know you're not a religious person. I know how you feel about going into a congregation. And I was an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. Once you are, once you always will be. And alcoholism is not a disease. It's sin. It's a sin against the temple of God, because we all are the temple of God if we'll just accept that. But I tell you what, brother, you hang in there. You have the best talk show in the nation, and I love you, and I know you and the other talk hosts don't get along because you're too radical for them. But I will say this.
Well, there's competition. There's ego. They're all a clique. You know, the Limbaugh, Hannity clique, they all have Fox News to promote each other. But, you know, those days are coming to an end. The bottom line is, I really don't care what the other man does or says. All that matters is what I do and say. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And I appreciate your kind words. I want to tell you something. This is very interesting to me. As I say, I'm not a particularly religious man. I am a spiritual person. And I've gone in and out of phases. People who know me know that. There have been years I've been super religious. Very religious. I mean, Sabbath, I could do a Sabbath and the dinners and the prayer. Very heavy duty. Very heavy duty, and it was my prayer to God that turned my life around. I've told you that story, but I don't want to pull a Glenn Beck on you, okay, and talk about my hemorrhoids, so to speak. That's between me and you, but I told you what happened. I was down on my luck, no matter what I had done, and I just asked God. It was almost 18 years ago. I said to God, or 20 years ago, I said, God, please, I've tried everything. I've gone back to school. I got two master's degrees. I got a PhD. I got two children. I've tried everything. It is not working. I don't have a job. What should I do? No matter which way I turn, the doors are closed to me, because although I did earn my PhD from a great university, they slammed the door in my face, God, because I'm a white male. And they said, white males need not apply. Remember, affirmative action was raging across the land at that time. Little did I know that the social engineers called liberals were doing me the greatest favor on earth. I didn't know that those doors that closed in my face were going to open a bigger door for me, much bigger door, the door of talk radio. Nobody could have told me that this would have happened. Well, I'd never forget, as long as I live, I went out on my deck. I had a house, a very small house on the hill somewhere in the San Francisco area. And I remember looking up the hill, whatever it was, and I prayed to God. I said, God, please, I'm at the end of my road here. I don't know what to do. I got children. I don't know what to do. I've written my books. I'm tapped out here. And I said, I don't want to have to beg anybody for anything. I said, I'm asking you not for a fortune. All I ask you, God, is to give me a living. I didn't say give me a fortune. Give me a living. Well, the rest is history. I sent tapes out to 450 radio stations. A few of them said, you're really good, blah, blah, blah. It led to one station, which led to what I have now, 16, 17 years later. So what I'm saying is prayer can help. Now, whether it was God's intervention or actualizing what was in me, I don't really know the answer to that. I would have to believe it was a combination of both. I think prayer actualizes, to use a New Age phrase, which is really valid, something within us. So it's going to lead me to something I want to tell many of you who are not really anti-God or anti-religion, but you're not religious and you don't know what to do with it. You see, I know that millions upon millions of Americans want to believe in God but can't believe in God. They don't know how to reach God. They've tried. They've mumbled. They've walked into churches. They don't feel anything. They go into temples and it's the mumbo jumbo in a foreign language. They don't know what to do. They like to believe, but they can't believe. So they don't know what to believe in. But on the other hand, they're not atheists and they don't know which way to turn. And the answer is to try a baby prayer. Try try to crawl before you can walk. And I'm going to show you how to crawl in a few words. I'm not going to hold anything back from you because I learned it myself. And here it is. You don't have to get up there with any complicated ritual to reach God. God understands simple language. And you want to hear one? Try this one every night for 7 nights. Take an aspirin and call me in a week. And here it is. Why don't you say to God every morning and or every evening a simple thing? But you got to really do it quietly, no one around, because you'll get self-conscious and it won't work. First of all, you're going to be self-conscious even if you do it alone. But you really got to lock yourself alone in a bedroom. I don't, if you're in a car, no one's watching. Just say to God, God, thank you for another day of life and a day of no pain. Try that. Just say that. Thank you for another day of life and almost no pain. No pain. It means you don't have cancer, let's say. You don't have this or that. That's a gift. It's a miracle. Ask anyone who's ever been sick whether that alone is enough to thank God for. Ask someone who's lost their health what a simple prayer like that means. So if you were to say that in the morning, say, God, thank you for giving me life again today and for another day without pain. Just do that, but really mean it. And see what happens after 7 days of doing that. See if your so-called tendencies toward your weaknesses or addictions, whatever they may be, I don't care what they are, see if you don't find yourself slightly moving away from them. Don't expect somebody in a white robe to come down in your living room. And don't expect an MGM affair to occur in your bedroom. It isn't going to happen. It's going to happen within you. Because as others have written, the kingdom of God is within you.
Savage.